Hey there, and welcome to today's lie that it's too late with Nika Maples. You're listening to the What's the Truth podcast with me, Jessica Hoddle. I'm a number one bestselling author, wife, and coach. I refuse to let you keep believing the lies that are coming at you from every direction. Every week, I'll speak truth, bring encouragement, and inspire you as I uncover the lies you may believe to be true about your life. Each episode is meant to challenge the way you think, to change the way you live. Man, this is a powerful interview I did with Nika. I wanted to just start crying and grab my tissues because her story is so powerful. She was 20 years old and had all these plans for her life, and then she felt like her future fell apart because she had suffered from a massive brainstem stroke. Now, to hear her story, you're going to just be amazed at her courage, at her hope, and the stories she shared about moving in the direction of her calling and how her hope in who God was began to transform her life and her physical body. She's a teacher, she is a communicator, she's a speaker, and she also has a magazine that you can get at the keepgoingshop.com to read all about it. It provides scripture, daily devotionals, real life stories from other women. And not only that, but it supports her ministry. Okay, so you might need to grab some tissues or maybe a pen and a piece of paper to take notes because your heart is about to be really encouraged. My friend, it is not too late. And I love the lie that she also addresses is that you are not behind. Let's get to it. Nika, I am so glad that you're here. You have the kindest, gentlest heart ever. And I'm so glad that my audience and the people listening get to hear more of your story because I know that I'm so encouraged by your story. You know, this lie today, it's too late. I mean, you could have easily have settled into this lie, easily, but your courageousness and just how you embody scripture of being an overcomer really has encouraged and blessed my heart. And so before we get into the nitty gritty and the really good deep stuff, I would love for people to understand what it means when you say it's not too late. Because it's really easy for us to believe, oh my God, it's too late. So many things have happened. I've done this. I've already sinned and you know, all these things. So what does it mean to you when people say this lie?
Well, I think there are two ways that people could be engaging with that lie. I'm so glad you mentioned like sin or actions that people think disqualify them. So, because I wasn't even thinking in those terms. So anyone who's thinking in those terms of thinking, because of what I've done, it's too late. Please apply anything I'm saying to your situation as well. But specifically what I'm talking about today is the lie of it's too late regarding time. Like too much time has passed. I'm too old. It's too late to begin. I've gone too far without results. So the time, you know, it's too late as far as time. But regarding either our behavior and actions or time, either way, it's never too late with the Lord. That he is the one who created time, so he's not constrained by it. In so many instances in my life, I have feared the passage of time. I'll explain that when I was 20 years old, 6 weeks after my 20th birthday, I experienced a massive brainstem stroke that left me quadriplegic. I couldn't speak, couldn't blink, nothing. And all I could think of was the passage of time. I wanted to get back to the things I had been doing. I was a sophomore in college, and it took so long just to fast forward through the events. It was a long time of rehabilitation, a long time of learning how to live again, because not only did I have to recover the use of my arms and legs, the use of my mouth, also, there were some cognitive differences immediately after my stroke that I had to be counseled through. I had a rehabilitation therapist that was specifically about operating in life. She wasn't an occupational therapist or a neurologist or a physical therapist. She was just counseling people through how to re-enter life after a traumatic brain injury. And she was like, now listen, you used to be able to write down numbers. I mean, you didn't have to write down phone numbers. You didn't have to write down email addresses. You could just remember them off the top of your head sometimes. Right now, even if somebody quotes a price to you, something short like a price, you won't be able to remember it. And that's okay. You're going to have to write down numbers as soon as you hear them. Those kind of things I had to work through. So that was, again, time on top of time. It was packing on. I was like, no. I need to get back to college. I need to get back to learning. I need to get back to finishing my degree. And here's what I thought. If I don't graduate with my class, the one I started with, then I'll be behind. And that idea, that concept of being behind everyone else, has dominated my thoughts for years. It truly has. I'm behind. I'm behind where I'm supposed to be. I'm behind everyone else. So I did not graduate college with a bachelor's degree in 4 years. I graduated in 10 years. Some of my friends that I started with were well into their careers, well into second and third degrees by the time I graduated. And that pressure, I remember thinking, now for the rest of my life, I'll be behind. It's too late. It's too late for me to begin anything. But it wasn't too late. The Lord kept assuring my heart, I can do anything in my own timing. So whereas a lot of school teachers begin when they're 22, my first teaching job began when I was almost 30 years old. Never been in a classroom before. So, you know, I'm coming into my very first time of teaching school. I didn't feel like the other first year teachers. I felt behind. And I thought, oh my goodness, you know, I'm starting 7 years later than everyone else. It's too late. It's too late. I'm behind. And again, I was not submitting to the gentle voice that God kept saying, it's not too late. It's not too late. I'm the one who orchestrates everything. You just walk hand in hand with me at my pace. It's interesting that if you look at Jesus's life, he did not drive a car. He was not going 60 miles an hour from town to town. He was walking. That is slow. If you walk from one town to another, you're going to take days to do it. Whereas we are used to going from one town to another in minutes. He took days. And it was the places that he stopped to rest, to get a drink of water, to pick fruit. Those moments became like part of his teaching. He would speak to his disciples about the tree that they passed, about the farm that they passed, and when we in this culture think it's too late, we are stepping outside of the model that Jesus gives us, which is slow is just fine.
That's so good. I'm like, I don't even know where to start from all that. And I think one of the biggest questions people might ask you is, how did that affect your relationship with God?
I can confess now, because I recognize it, that some resentment and bitterness came into our relationship. Mm-hmm. It was like this cool frost that was on everything. Now, was I still engaged with him? Of course. I spent time in my Bible and in prayer every single morning. I mean, that is my lifetime practice, is journaling, spending time with him. But I will admit now, there was this frost on a lot of our interactions, because it was like, and so when exactly are you going to do this? When are you going to fulfill the promises that you've given me? Because my life has been filled with many things he's asked me to wait for. For one, I think there are people in your audience who definitely need to hear a voice saying this. I've never been married and have always wanted to be. So from the time that I was when my friends were graduating from college, when I just said I already felt behind, they were not only graduating from college, they were also getting married when they were 22. So by 25, I was like, okay, so how many ways am I going to be behind here? They're starting to have children. And so, as the years ticked on in my 30s, I started going, God, I just don't understand this. I do not understand why I have asked, why I have been faithful to pray, why I have put myself in positions at church or to meet people who are like-minded. And not one time have you brought anyone who was suitable to marry. I mean, not once was I ever even close to that. And so now at 46, I mean, walking through that time and feeling like, oh my goodness, now my biological clock has changed. I mean, I always thought that I would bear children. And so to wait past a certain point to even have that opportunity, yeah, there was a coolness in my interactions with God. I still had faith. I still asked and prayed, but I kind of was like, and, you know, by now, will I even enjoy it when you give it to me? Because so many opportunities are now gone. That's also something that I felt regarding publishing my books, because I was writing a lot, and again, publishers and agents were not interested, but I felt it as a calling on my life. And all of that contributed to a little bit of distance that I felt with the Lord, because I would say, okay, so I know that you called me to write, but I'm not having any traction there. I know that you have called me to speak. Again, I'm not having any traction. I can't even, people don't respond when I reach out to them. Sometimes if they're interested in me, then they reject it. And they're like, never mind, you're not a good fit for our event. And then with my personal life, with marriage and children and all of that, I just felt like, okay, too much time has passed. It's too late. It's too late. And I think one of the best things about me coming on your podcast right now is that plenty of people, after all those things had happened, could come on and then talk about the healing of the Lord in that lie. Well, it's not too late because it's all already happened. And guys, cheer up. It's, you know, I'm still in the middle of it. I'm still right in the middle of all the waiting. I'm still right in the middle of battling the lie that it's too late. And it's not all fun and games. It's not all perfectly coming together wrapped in a bow. So what I can say to your listeners is, okay, we're right in the same race together. I'm not at the end of it. I'm right in it with you. This is how I battle, currently, how I battle the lie. It's too late.
What keeps you going then? Somebody's looking at you right now and you're like, okay, I relate to you. I'm in the waiting with you right now and I am believing. What would you say to that woman or to that girl face to face? Like, how are you taking your step forward every single day with joy in your heart, not with perfection, but knowing the truth? How do you move forward?
Definitely a tool that I use is scripture. And I will write them on post-it notes. I will write them on index cards, post them around, because it's God's truth. What is God's truth? Just like you have developed a ministry that's absolutely encapsulated by one concept. What does God say about this? It doesn't matter as much what I say. We compare it to what God says. So I compare what I'm thinking and feeling to what he has written, his truth. And what happens so often is I'll have to stop and say, now if this is real, if what is written down here is real, then I don't really have to worry. I really don't have to worry. And I'll share a few of those scriptures with your listeners right now. For one, Psalm 31:15 says, my times are in your hand. It's so easy for me to think he's forgotten me. God's not realizing how much time is passing in my life. He has too much to do. He's taken his eye. No, your times are right in the palm of his hand. He hasn't set them aside. He hasn't put them down. It's not something that he's forgotten about. And I think, okay, it's not. It's also, that means it's not for me to decide the way things go in my life. So that's one. Another one, Psalm 37, 23 through 24. I quote this one over myself all day long. I will quote it over myself all day long. The Lord directs the steps of the godly. He delights in every detail of their lives. Though they stumble, they will never fall, for the Lord holds them by the hand. Once I was young, and now I am old, yet I have never seen the godly abandoned or their children begging for bread. So the first part is what I always quote over myself. The Lord directs the steps of the godly. He delights in every detail of their lives. Because time is merely a detail. The passage of time is merely a detail. And to read that God delights in the details, it's not that he is aware of the details. He delights in them. It will bring him no end of joy when he sees me connect with a divine appointment that he knew because he directs the steps of the godly. Those details, you know, when you walk away from an encounter like that, where I can't believe I was at the grocery store the exact time as this person and I needed to meet them because we talked about this or whatever the circumstance is, there are so many times that you look and like, I could have missed that person by 1 second. But God delighted in the details. So if we can attribute those encounters to the Lord and say that they're not coincidences, but his divine direction, if we can attribute those encounters to the Lord, why would we then say, but everything else, I mean, like the big things about me graduating on time or my book being picked up in time or my spouse for life, he didn't care about that. I mean, he's just a little slow on that. It's not true. He knows exactly when and where and how the details of your life will play out. And he's not the master controlling your life. He's enjoying it with you.
Yeah, no, that's good. And I think we often think when tragedy strikes and the enemy comes to take us out, right? Kill, steal, and destroy, that we're done. And it's really easy. It's really easy to stay down. And often many people do. And so when tragedy came for you, how did hope become what you clung to?
I think it's Romans 6:24. I could be wrong. You might have to look up the words to find the exact address of it. But it says, who hopes for what he already has? But when we cannot see it, then we hope for it. And I thought, I have to hope because I don't have what I need. I knew that I needed to continue living to fulfill what he had put on my heart to do. And I was hoping for, I was willing to hope for it. I had nothing else going for me. I mean, I could just listen to what doctors said. Doctors said that I would remain in a vegetative state in assisted living for the rest of my life. I thought, well, I mean, I guess that could happen. And I know that I would be effective for the kingdom there because I know that I was effective for the kingdom when I was in the ICU. I mean, and when I was in the hospital, I interacted with nurses and was effective for the kingdom. And even when I was quadriplegic, I prayed for the nurses and doctors, and that prayer was effective. So I know that no matter what the circumstance of my life, no matter what prison I was in, whether that be, in my case, it was my body. For some listeners, it might be relationships, marriage, whatever feels like a prison. Doesn't mean that you lose your effectiveness for the kingdom. You can still be effective in an area where you feel stuck waiting on the Lord for his timing. But the point is, when you have a prognosis that's very negative, why wouldn't you hope? Why wouldn't you believe that the Lord could turn that around? And if he doesn't turn the facts around, he can turn around your faith within that factual situation.
Which I think in return then will also change everything else, right?
Yes. Usually, yes. Mm-hmm.
And you seem, you shared a little bit about that story in your own life where when you started to believe, you saw things start to change in your life. And can you just share the story about, you know, when you were going through rehab and, you know, they're trying to tell you to grab this ball and squeeze it. And you're like, stop giving me this ball. I don't relate to it. I'm never going to want to throw a ball again. Yes. Can you just share like what that story really means to you and how it really changed just your life and how you view things? Because I know it really impacted mine when I had heard that story shared.
I think that everything we do, if we connect it to a superior meaning, then it elevates what we're doing. It's like you and I both agree that when we choose helpful actions, that's a prophetic act to engage with our destiny that God has given us. It's not about the now, it's about the then as well. And so for me, I would say to anyone, if you connect anything you're doing to a higher meaning and a kingdom meaning, it will elevate the mundane. So I was in a long-term rehabilitation, which meant that every night I was spending the night in my hospital room and every day I was in this hospital gym working with therapists. And they have a battery of things that they do. And one of them, yes, squeezing balls was one of them. One of the major things was they had two plastic bowls on this table, and they have these little white plastic pegs that are like cigarette butts. That's about the length of them. And you're supposed to move one plastic peg to the other bowl. That's what I was doing that day. And I'm 20 years old. I had gone from being in a sophomore, like college classes, very active, to moving plastic pegs from one bowl to another. That was like, why am I existing? So I said to my occupational therapist, I was like, this is not doing it for me. I need you to know that I have reasons to get back to movement, and it's not because I'm gonna be picking up cigarette butts. That's not what I'm gonna do for my life. So if you're asking me to do these pegs, that's all it feels like to me. And she said, well, then what do you want? Well, I brought her a picture of a prom dress, myself in high school. And I said, I made that. I'm a seamstress. So I'm going to need to thread a needle. So that's where we're headed. We're headed toward me threading a needle. So I don't know what you need to do to put in between that, but that's what I want to get to. She was like, okay, well, that gave her direction. And I said, oh, here's another thing. I'm a Christian. I want to read my Bible every day. But right now, with hands that are kind of like curled up and not functioning, I'm ripping the pages out of my Bible. So here's the goal. I want to turn pages in a Bible. And I said, I'm a writer. Right now, I can't even hold a pencil. But I'm going to need not only to hold a pencil, but to type on a keyboard. So that's our goal there, is that I'm going to be able to type on a keyboard. And she really was ignited by those goals. She was like, okay, now I know how to get there. I mean, I know we're not starting with threading a needle. That would never happen, but we're going to get there. And with the writing, she said, we actually have a typewriter in the gym, but you will have to wait till after hours because I'm not making that part of your plan during the day. You'll have to come when all of us go home at the end of the day. The gym is part of the hospital, obviously. She said, we will leave it open for you and we will leave that typewriter out for you. So I would wait until 5 o'clock when they all went home. I'd eat my dinner at the hospital cafeteria and then roll to the therapy gym and just type. And I mean, I don't know, people will have to envision that I wasn't typing. I mean, I was slamming the keyboard with these hands that were like clubs. I could barely open my fists. My fingers did not really like work individually, but it was the same concept of picking up an individual white peg and putting it into a brand new bowl for me to try to hit those individual keys. So I put paper in someone put it in there for me, I think, the paper in the typewriter, and I hammered out these, I mean, you couldn't even read. They weren't sentences because my hands were just falling on the keyboard, falling on the keyboard. So what is miraculous about that is that it was a prophetic act for what God was going to do. But I had to suffer through days of things that didn't look right. I can't tell you how embarrassing it was to look at that piece of paper that no one could read. I knew the words that I was trying to write, but I would mangle them with two or three letters for every one that I wanted to write. So the time passing was a heavy feeling for me. It was like, how many more days of this? How many more days until I can type actual words? And then after I could type actual words, they would come out so slowly. I mean, I was thinking quickly what I wanted to write, but then I could only type one letter at a time. But all of that was worth waiting through because, yes, eventually things changed. Like you're saying, eventually things do change. They do. If you will wait and be patient and head in that direction. So I'll encourage people to head in the direction of where they'd like to go while they wait.
It, like, your story makes me want to cry all the time because I just love the beauty of it. It's just the beauty that you said, these pegs are great, but this isn't my calling. I need to move in the direction that he's called me because I know that's what's going to keep me motivated, keep me focused. And that's just beautiful that your body started to respond to that calling that he placed on you. You know, you're like, okay, these are the things that I need. And I feel like our brains, since our brains are so powerful, just knowing that you wanted to be able to turn the page of your Bible without ripping it, it's just a beautiful example of that direction. Like, she knew then where you wanted to go so that you could train those muscles to do the thing that you were supposed to be doing. And it's just so beautiful. And so how do you think our passions fuel our purpose and prepare a way for healing?
One thing I notice as I travel and speak, a lot of people think that the thing that they love came from them. And the thing that is dutiful came from the Lord. So they separate the two, not realizing that perhaps the thing that you love is the thing you are meant to do. Perhaps the thing that you love is what he put in you to pursue. But I think we feel like that's indulgent. If we enjoy doing something, that it's indulgent. It must be selfish. It must be the flesh if we're instead of the spirit. If we're moving in the direction of something that will bring us pleasure. It's now I'm thinking, do you read the same Bible that I read? Jesus enjoyed life. God took great pleasure in the things that he did. And he enjoyed watching other people take pleasure. He instituted feasts. He didn't say famine all the time. Fasting all the time. That's what you're supposed to do. Is if you follow me, you fast all the time. No, he said, there's feasting, there's celebration, there's enjoyment. He put into our every week, he put a Sabbath rest. That's because he's saying, and I've even had people twist a Sabbath rest thinking, what's that supposed to look like? Almost like that's a drudgery. Like, okay, well, if I have to take a Sabbath, what am I supposed to do? Well, I'm like, no, you enjoy your life. Just don't work. Don't work for money, knowing that God will provide the other 6 days of the week. But you can go shop. You can go hang out with friends. You can go dance. You can go to the park. Do whatever you do to enjoy your life. Take time to enjoy the money you're making the other 6 days. That's what the Sabbath is for, is to say, I know my God made life for me to enjoy. And he loves it when we're looking at all the things he made. I think passion fuels our pursuit that way. When we realize, wait a second, this was supposed to be fun. Life was supposed to be fun. And to connect that to the passage of time, that's what made everything not fun to me, was when I was watching the time tick. It was like, even the things that I was passionate about and the things that I was pursuing had a time limit on them to me. It's like, well, I can only feel like I've done this if it happens by the time I'm 35. I can only feel like it's right if it happens by the time I'm 40. I can, you know, and I kept putting all these bizarre, out of the blue time constraints on things that he never said needed to be there. I actually do have two more scriptures that I wanted to read. One is about aging, because honestly, right now, I mean, I decided a year ago that I was going to stop dyeing my hair. And I just cut my hair real short, and I was like, I'm not dyeing it from here on out. And I'm growing it out, and now I have like silver streaks in it. I personally love it, and I get compliments on it sometimes. But I'll tell you, the enemy uses that sometimes to sneak in. I can personally like the way I look, but I'll walk out the house, and if I'm speaking somewhere, sometimes they use an old picture of me on the screen when they're introducing me, and it'll be several years ago when my hair was dyed. And I'll think, this is what I think, right before I walk up on the stage and proclaim the word of the Lord, the enemy is going to say, let me get in one more jab before she gets up there. Let me just get in one more. Here we go. Okay, Nika, guess what? Everyone in the audience is already disappointed in you, because they see that picture up there where your hair was dark, and they think you're younger. And then when you get up there, they're going to see that you have gray hair, and they're going to be like, oh, we have to listen to her. I mean, is that absurd? And I think he is constantly doing little things to make people, as they age, feel like they have less to say instead of more to say. It is the fact that I have lived through the many things I've lived through that I can say, yeah, and God's been good to me through all of it, and he will be good to you too. So Psalm 92, 12 through 15 says, the godly flourish like palm trees and grow strong like the cedars of Lebanon, for they are transplanted to the Lord's own house. They flourish in the courts of God, and even in old age, they still produce fruit. They will remain vital and green. They will declare, the Lord is just. He is my rock. There is no evil in him. So, you know, of course, God gives wisdom. Wisdom has no age. God can give wisdom to a 14-year-old. However, if a 14-year-old goes, I promise, no matter what you go through, God's going to be faithful to you, something in you goes, oh, you just haven't seen that much. But when a 70-year-old tells me, I promise, God will be faithful to you no matter what, then I think to myself, it's not because they're more wise, but they've seen enough to know he will be. He will be faithful. So that verse, that people at any age will still bear fruit, I'm like, for those of us who are seeing our bodies change because of age, that does not mean that your spirit, outwardly you're wasting away, inwardly you're being renewed day by day. And you are not on a time limit spiritually. You have a time limit on this earth. One day, God's going to say, time's up, you're going home. So be effective, because there is no time limit other than that one. So do what you can as long as it is called today. You will bear fruit all the way until old age. The other thing that is a scripture that stands out to me is Psalm 33:10. Because I think in relation to time, I've always thought that somebody else could thwart me, that even the enemy working could thwart my purpose. Like, the reason this hasn't happened yet is because the enemy has been derailing me. He's derailing me. Of course, this would have happened by now. If the enemy hadn't stepped in and slowed the whole thing down, well, it says in Psalm 33:10, the Lord foils the plans of the nations. He thwarts the purposes of the people, but the plans of the Lord stand firm forever, the purposes of his heart throughout all generations. So what God has spoken over you, the plan he has spoken over you, no one can mess it up. That's what it says. The plans of the Lord stand firm forever, and the purposes of his heart throughout all generations. So friend and listener, what God has spoken into you as his plan and purpose for you, just know the enemy cannot mess it up. He's not going to mess it up. Only you, if you decide not to participate with the Lord, can mess it up. If you decide not to walk with the Lord in it, that's the way it's going to stop. But as long as you're staying with him, it won't stop. The enemy cannot, anything that he does to slow down the process, the Lord will speed up later. So your time is not connected to the enemy. It's connected to your Lord. You stay close to him.
Okay, Nika. So we know the lie, right? We know we believe this lie. It's too late. I'm behind. I love that lie too, because I know so many of us believe that. So what is the truth that you want to tell people as we walk away here together?
Instantly, what comes to my mind is he's worth waiting for. He's worth waiting for. No matter how long you have to wait, he'll be worth waiting for. And the verse I would like to read over you as a blessing, just wherever you are, if you're running, how about just stop for 1 second, close your eyes. If you're driving, just listen with your eyes open, but be still in your heart for just a minute and let this soak in. It's from Habakkuk 2:3. This is the Lord's blessing over you. The vision awaits its appointed time. It hastens to the end. It will not lie. If it seems slow, wait for it. It will surely come. It will not delay.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the What's the Truth podcast. I'm so glad that you're here, but I don't want to miss you being here. So make sure you subscribe to the What's the Truth podcast, and I'd love to hear what truth that you're standing on today by leaving a review. Until next time, come hang out with me on Instagram at Jessica Hoddle, where we can connect and continue to support and encourage each other on this journey to uncovering the lies that we believe to be true about our lives.